No, it wasn't recording, chaps. I've just hit it again, and now it's recording.
Well, Will, you've been recording it too, yes?
Nope. His is
no,
broken.
Mine's broken.
No!
Hello and welcome to episode 93 of the Pocket Gamer Podcast. I am your returning host, Ben Maxwell, and with me is Will Wilson.
Hello.
And nobody else, because we unfortunately received a complaint this week, which very gravely said that, Will, you say what they said.
I said that the American in the group drops in and out constantly, and he had to stop listening after 10 minutes because it was unbearable and obnoxious. He doesn't know if anyone else is having this problem. I think quite a lot of people are having that problem, to be fair.
I do have that problem. I can barely listen to any of the podcast. I do have to drop out constantly. It's an awful thing, really.
I edited a special one and put it to a side where I knock out all your voices and just leave me talking. And then I put it on repeat and go to bed.
Why don't we publish that? That sounds like a much better product. But anyway, the upshot of this is the upshot of this complaint letter is Pop Game taking decisive action, and Tracy has been fired entirely. So he's no longer part of Pocket Gamer or the podcast, and is claiming benefits from Obama
personally as well.
Yeah.
I can confirm, despite popular belief, that I have not been fired, and I am not.
Who's that?
Excuse me, you're not meant to be here.
What? Who are you?
Andrew.
Oh, hi, Andrew. You sound odd. Someone we used to know, who we treated very badly.
Did you guys hear that somebody had made a complaint about the podcast?
No. You didn't hear what we were saying, did you, Tracy, before you went around?
No, why were you talking about me?
Oh, no. No.
God, no. What an idea!
Silly Billy. Tracy, you've bought a new microphone, I hear. You don't seem to be phased
out.
I should really tell you my story about the chili.
Yes, no, that was good.
Yeah.
Okay, for listeners, because I might keep in Chase's reaction to that because it makes me feel happy. But for listeners who are wondering why the hell we sound like we already know what's going to happen next, it's because we've already actually recorded this once already, and we've got about 20 minutes in, and we didn't have it recording, so we're kind of backtracking a little bit, but.
It's better. Sounds snappier this time, I think.
It does sound snappier, actually, which is weird. Maybe we should do all podcasts twice over.
Yeah.
That'd be funny, guys. Up till midnight.
3 or 4 hours a night. Wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, my story is that it's a recommendation to all listeners out there that I was using Jamie Oliver's iPhone app, which is very good. I was cooking a very nice meal, and I was using a pestle and mortar to mash up this chili, really hot chili, like super hot, dried, crazy hot. And basically what happened was that I was putting it in the meal, ripping it up with my fingers, putting it in the little bits, and then a few minutes later I felt a little bit of itching in my eyes, and I put my hand up across my temples and rubbed a ton of chili in my eyes, and it burns like hell. It's so painful. I mean, I've broken quite a few bones before in the past, but
Well, I was going to say, the good thing about this story is, even though this is the second time I've heard it, it's just funny hearing you getting hurt, so I don't mind. It's still fresh, like those chilies in your eyes.
Well, I want to... go on, sorry.
Let me guess, Will. Have you ever gone to the bathroom without washing your hands after cutting chilies?
No, the thing is, I'm pretty sure I did wash my hands, but I'd mashed the chili up into tiny pieces, And I guess flecks of it must have got all over my... I probably didn't wash my hands very well, I've got to say. I was in a rush.
And
I don't know, it just went... I was 20 minutes of utter burning pain. I was swearing like more than a sailor. I was swearing like a sailor, infinite.
that's pretty much half the amount of suffering any listener of the podcast has to go through, so I don't know why you're complaining. It's only 20
minutes. You know
what?
I got to scream, it burns! Like, I actually screamed out, it burns! It burns! Without being, like, joking around.
Wait a minute. I'm having a vision. I don't know why, but I'm getting this feeling that at this point I'm meant to say, well, that was an interesting story, but now let's have some real news? How? Deja vu. So, first up, we have Game Center, which was announced last night at a conference, which I attended, that Apple populated with hundreds upon hundreds of girls in yellow T-shirts holding giant signs that said media or guest. And I don't know who the guests were, but yeah, there were many of us there, and we watched a video link of the conference over in, I think it was in San Francisco, which was obviously being hosted in the morning over there. And all sorts of things were revealed, various products, one of which we'll talk about in a minute, and iOS 4.1, which is going to be released next week and will include Game Center, which is the kind of open-faint style, social, gaming, whatever thing that's going to make us all closer through our phones. No one will ever have to speak to a real person again. and alongside this was Epic Games, who do the Gears of War series and, of course, the Unreal FPS series on PC. They unveiled Epic Citadel, or Project Sword, which is an amazing-looking RPG, which is going to have turn-based player-versus-player fighting. You've got two control schemes, dual sticks, or tap on the screen, you walk there. But the most striking thing about this is the visuals, which, Will, you're going to have to think of an even more interesting way to describe how good they are. I liked your last one.
The last one was really good.
It was, but if it's not fresh, I'm not going to be impressed.
Fresh, you say. Okay, I'll come up with a new one now. It's a little bit like opening your eyes and finding yourself falling in free fall towards a ground made of pudding and custard. But finding when you dive into the custard that your face is cool, like refreshing mountain water freezing over you, and you're standing there on top of a mountain and screaming, "This looks amazing!"
11 out of 10. That's way better. So,
wow, that was good.
If you haven't tried the demo, what's the point? You now know exactly how it feels. But yeah, in this tech demo, you can wander around a giant citadel, which is a city, and look at people's washing hanging between their buildings. No actual people, unfortunately. The detailed normal mapped bricks, wander into the cathedral and look at the incredibly shiny floor and detailed statue. And you can wander outside the castle down to a kind of circusy area, or Renaissance fair, as Will said in the last attempt at this. Look back at the castle. Now, the whole thing runs incredibly smoothly, apart from a couple of moments. So if you look at the castle, it stutters, and also there's a couple of other points where you see the frame rate drop. What are your thoughts on that, Tracy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty fair to say that it runs pretty smoothly, although it might be a different story when there's actually things going on the screen and the Citadel is actually populated with characters and,
yeah,
and such. But, I mean, the game doesn't necessarily play out in full real time, so that kind of can help, mm-hmm, help, you know, with the performance aspects. But I do think it's you know, as we were talking about before, it's one thing to be able to do that sort of high visual quality. It's another thing entirely to actually make that work as a game. So, it's obviously only a demo, and they're going to have a lot more time to implement that engine and really kind of fine-tune it, and specifically with the game, really polish up the game, because they said that they're going to be releasing it by the end of this year. So I'm fairly confident that they'll be able to do a good job on it. I mean, you look at Gears of War, for example. That was a really early Xbox 360 title, and I remember seeing that for the first time and being like, crap, there's just no way they're going to make this work. It just is too graphically intense. And they did, and it worked really well, and that game has really good gameplay. I mean, there are complaints that can be lodged against other aspects of the game, but as an action game, it's really good. So, you know, I have faith in Epic's ability to be able to churn out, you know, a good, you know, decent action game. But this isn't an action game, right? I mean, because you had mentioned earlier that, or referenced earlier, that it's not an action game, it's actually a role-playing game.
Yeah, yeah.
With turn-based combat. So it's a bit different. Although, to be fair, it is technically being developed by Epic, but it's actually being developed by a group that was bought by Epic called Chair. So it's not necessarily like it's not like the Unreal team is actually, the Unreal Tournament team is working on this game. It's the guys who did Shadow Complex and the really awful Advent Rising game that was for Xbox years and years and years ago. Mm-hmm. So they do know a little bit about, you know, developing role-playing games and developing like games that are not just beefy guys shooting each other with oversized guns.
Why do you need any other type of game? I mean, yeah, this player, but the combat itself, there's two control schemes, one for the hardcore, which is swiping the screen and your moves are translated, and another one where you drag icons onto the other player. So it might be a boot onto your friend's face, which is what they demonstrated, and you know the action is then played out. So the game seems to be...
Could you drag the boot onto their foot? And like dress them,
and just dress them, or maybe dress them off and gradually undress them. That would, and then humiliate them. maybe. I'm not sure about the sexual aspects of the game, but the battling is, you know, it's quite interesting in terms of the control scheme. They seem to be trying to really broaden the lower the kind of barrier to access, because you've got these two combat control schemes, and then for moving you can either just dump your thumbs on the screen and you instantly get two virtual analog pads wherever you've placed them, or you can just tap anywhere in the world and you walk over there, and then swiping left and right on the screen allows you to look around as you walk, so you're kind of on autopilot. It's a nice, you know, even though I'm whatever a hardcore gamer is, I'm probably that. I quite like the supposedly casual control scheme. I like tapping it and
I don't like that control scheme.
Neither do I.
It feels odd.
Yeah, it does. It feels odd. That's it. But it doesn't. That doesn't mean it's bad. It's different.
No, it means it's bad. If it feels odd, it's bad to me. I only like things I know, like treacle.
Yeah. Do you come from a village that kind of used pitchforks a lot, maybe burning?
Yeah, we did occasionally on weekends when some sort of foreign traveller from the nearby town.
Yeah. And when they were walking around, did you maybe see a yellow arrow a little distance away from them, and they'd move towards it whilst looking left and right?
Yes.
Yeah, I can see your problem with the game now. Yeah. Oh, well. But, you know, all in all, this is an incredibly impressive project, and probably most amusingly, and most interestingly, is that this is kind of harking back to the Unreal versus Quake PC battle between id and Epic, because the Rage tech demo is being released this year as well. So we've got exactly the same thing: two tech demos which show off fairly static-ish game worlds, not in terms of animation, but you know, there's not any real life in them, which are going to be followed up by a supposedly incredibly engaging game further down the line that you'll have to pay for. So it's going to be an interesting battle to watch, and hopefully these two teams are going to kind of really push the envelope of the ambitions perhaps of other kind of AAA studios.
I wonder that, you know, Epic are a massive, they make a lot of their money through licensing out their technology, and of course they've got the licensing deals that they've sort of sketched out for the iPhone, which is that you have to make a certain number of sales before they start claiming royalties, which is quite clever, really, just purely because of the volume of games that are released and the, you know. But I wonder if the other companies that also license out their tech, because it don't do it anymore.
No, they're
owned by Bethesda. And, well, actually, they're owned by, what are they, Oberon? Is it Oberon Media?
Actually, you can, they will be licensing, but only to games that are published by Bethesda. So, yeah, if you can be a third party developer, but you have to be published by them, and then you'll have access to the tools.
But there are a couple of other PC developers who are known for licensing out their technologies. Crytek, not so much.
Well, I don't know.
They have been a few, but not that many. But I mean, I was thinking more specifically of Valve's Source Engine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting to see if they now see this iOS market as a potential area which Epic have moved into and are basically just going to, you know, spread their engine around. Whether they'll be interested in coming into the market now that Epic have presence in it.
Probably not. I mean, that's a good. It would be a good idea, I think. But probably not. I mean, the reason given how few developers have bought Source Engine, I mean, the thing's been out for, gosh, 6-7 years, something like that, maybe even longer, and not a lot of games have actually used it in comparison to Unreal Engine 3, which in the space of a couple of years, you have dozens and dozens of games. Part of it is, you know, Epic built a company and that had a full sales department, you know, kind of a full staff that could promote the engine, whereas they didn't really Valve didn't really have that, and same thing with id, they didn't really have that, you know, it was a group of very, and still is, they're groups of very talented programmers, and the programmers are not at all interested about selling their technology. I mean, they're more interested in about building the technology.
Mm.
And even Epic has had trouble supporting sales of its engine, you know, because remember very early on in the console life cycle when Epic was saying, oh yeah, we've got this engine and you can do it on Xbox and PC and PS3. There were a lot of complaints that Epic wasn't giving enough support for its engine because even they had not scaled up and really effectively hired enough people to support all of these developers that were jumping on board. I think now, you know, they were very quick to address that. And I think now in moving to iPhone and iPad, I think they have that support network there. I just don't see, you know, maybe id, because they're owned, you know, by a much larger company, maybe they would have those resources. But I don't think Valve does. And then you have to add the other component to that. You know, Valve is very slow to release anything. It takes so long for them to finish one game that I can imagine if they were to decide today that we were going to make, you know, they were going to do a modified port of the original Half-Life for iPhone, it wouldn't come out for like 2 years. So
2 years is a bit optimistic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so we mentioned some tech a little bit earlier on, Apple tech. We're now, I should inform you, broaching virgin territory. This is further than we got in the last attempt at the podcast, so we don't know what's going to happen next.
I'm going to cut out the recording now. Everyone, hold on.
Let's explore new grounds. No pitchforks today, Will. We don't need familiarity all the time.
We don't like your type around here.
But we do like the iPod Touch, fourth generation, which was also revealed to much fanfare, as you heard there. That was a live recording from the conference. And, well, it's an iPhone. Sorry, an iPod. Well, no, it is. It's a bloody iPhone without the phone. Jobs even used those very words. So it's, you know, it's everything you'd expect from the iPod Touch, except it's thinner than a Pop-Tart, and thinner than the original one, which I suppose was also thinner than a Pop-Tart. So that's a bad analogy. Yep. Oh, well. Like I said, I don't know what's going on. Anything could happen. And it's got two cameras for FaceTime, which has also been added. But perhaps the most interesting thing that was said last night was that the iPod Touch is now Apple claim is now the biggest selling portable gaming device and has outsold Sony and Nintendo's efforts combined, which is quite an incredible statistic to think about, given that, you know, Apple haven't, although the App Store has existed for a long time, they haven't exactly shown a huge enthusiasm for games. They didn't gear up to the game thing quite as quickly as perhaps other people, you know, the developers who've used their services have, but now they seem to really be embracing it, and suddenly they've got a system which they can lay claim to a stat like that. I mean, is this, you know, is the world turning inside out, Tracy? What's going on here?
It's a bold claim. Yeah. You know, if you look at, there's evidence to support it, support what Steve Jobs is saying. I mean, if you look at here in the U.S., portable sales for DS and PSP are down. Particularly, PSP is way, way down. Nintendo sold about 500,000 DSs in June, compared to PSP sold just over 100,000 units. So that's what, 600, a little bit more than 600,000 units between the two. In a single day, there are 230,000 iPhone, iPod touches, and iPads that are activated.
Yeah.
So times that by 30, that's pretty serious numbers. Obviously not all of those people. That's obviously, well, one, it's obviously including iPhone and iPad. So if you were to even cut that in a third, let's say, you're talking about 230,000 times 10, which is what, 2,300,000 units. That's a hell of a lot. And obviously, even if you were to cut that number in half and say it's only 1 million new iPod Touch owners who are playing games, that's almost twice as many people who are buying DS and PSP to play games. So,
Tracy, I have to ask, your idea of half of 1.3 million is 1 million?
No, I said 2.3.
Oh, okay. Well, then I don't have to ask, but I did anyway.
Right, because I did do the math correctly, right? Because 230,000 times,
absolutely,
10 million. Okay.
I did the listening incorrectly.
So, I mean, if you're talking about 1 million, even if you were to lowball that and say it's, you know, 750,000 new iPod Touch owners that are playing games, that's a lot of people. But I think even if put the numbers aside, in terms of perception and momentum, it's all on Apple's side. It's all towards iPhone and iPod Touch. People want to play games on these devices. And so for Steve Jobs to go out there and have both the numbers behind his argument and sort of the industry's, you know, sort of support in terms of all of the most, you know, the vast preponderance of games that are coming out in the next 6 to 12 months on the portable side are coming out on iPhone and iPod Touch. The notable exceptions that I can think of are God of War, Ghost of Sparta, which is a PSP exclusive, and Super Scribblenauts, which is a DS exclusive. Those are the two that come off, you know, on the top of my head right now. But everything else is coming out on iPhone and iPod Touch too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an incredible feat and a good one. I suppose people like Will, who don't have iPhones, will finally be able to enjoy things, the finer things in life. But talking of people not having iPhones, obviously the Game Center coming out. We've discussed this a little bit in a previous podcast, but OpenFaint, obviously expanding their functionality, and they were adding in cross-platform invites. Now that has since this is now changing to actual cross-platform play. They're really pushing this, and which is something that Game Center doesn't offer. I don't know if Apple would ever embrace that kind of, you know, I, yeah, okay. I know that they wouldn't. Yes, that's fair enough. But you know, so this is an area that the third party social networks can move into fairly safely, other than their own competition, which obviously they're used to anyway. Will, you know a little more about this story than I do. What's the service called?
Playtime.
Is that? Oh, that's what it's called. I thought you were.
It's called Playtime.
We're not carrying on. It's time.
Yeah, real-time multiplayer for iOS and Android. Interestingly, we kind of accidentally sort of broke this news last week.
Kind of accidentally.
I mean, the headline last week's story when they did introduce the email functions was a little bit misleading because we actually said it was cross-platform play. But this is actually cross-platform play. So in a way, we're ahead of the curve. Everyone else. I suspect OpenFate were going to just release this news anyway.
Serendipity.
But it's, well, I mean, Aura Faint. I always forget that's their actual name. It's just such a stupid company name, sorry. Anyway, yeah, they're going to have real-time gaming for across iOS and Android services. Obviously, they're going to try and fill in the gap. They're going to try and use Game Center user accounts on the iOS side so that they can, you know, it becomes easier so you can use both services at once without having to worry about fragmentation as you do in the current social networking things. I actually really like OpenFaint as a social networking and achievement scoring system. I think it's actually quite good. It's one of the better ones.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Oh, no, I wouldn't say it's one of the better ones. I'd say it's the best. I mean, yeah, I know it's wise to often be, you know, kind of guarded about saying this one's the best, this one's not as good. I think at this point, you know, I felt the same way very early on in the iPhone lifecycle that, okay, you know, there's a lot of social networks out there, gaming networks, you know, they each offer something new. I think now it's very clear, at least in my mind, OpenFaint is the best. I mean, it has more features than any of the other ones that are currently available, whether you're talking about Plus Network or Game Off Live. You know, they're all capable, they're all fine, but in terms of features, OpenFaint just blows them out of the water. It, combined with the number of games that support it, I mean, it's pretty clear.
Yeah, no, it's really grown, hasn't it, over time.
I like the fact you can search local people, like high schools near you, so you can say,
yeah,
I may not be the best in the world, but I'm the best in the East Anglian region of the UK. If you ignore the guy in Norwich.
But that's, I mean, that really is, that's what's good about this kind of social network scoring, in that it's a bit frustrating trying to beat the number one player in the world, but if you have a bunch of friends who are roughly on the same level, you have scores that you can, you know, attain. Like, absolutely trouncing all your times on trials, Will, has been fantastic for me. I should point out...
You haven't trounced all my times. Thank you very much.
I think listeners should know that I have trounced pretty much all your times.
Really? No way. Let's be honest here. Listeners. He's trounced quite a few of my beginner times, which, I mean, let's face it, any monkey could do that.
Although I tell you what, those are perhaps the harder courses to do, given that, you know, there's less room for manoeuvre.
Yeah, have you beaten the one I beat your time by 13 seconds on yet?
Yes.
What, really?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I just said yes because I don't
and
know.
And you thought that the chili in your eye was painful.
I'm going to have to check this later on tonight. But I like this. You know, I love the I love competing against lesser beings.
Yeah, it was me to aspire to be like you. But you know, this is what's so good about OpenFaint. And all of the services and just the whole concept in general, it really kind of enables and encourages friendly and unfriendly rivalry. I think ours is unfriendly. Well,
isn't it?
Yeah. If this podcast was if we were in the same room, there'd be danger of some kind of physical violence. I don't know why I might knock your drink over or something. I wouldn't hit you. I don't hit. Maybe I just threaten to knock your drink over. Maybe I just raise my hand and go, eh?
That would be enough.
Maybe. Maybe I would force you to go down to the room of mine, which I'm going to do now. Let's go. Rimmer. Rimmer. So we find ourselves in the rumor mine, in the echoey.
Smells.
Yeah, it does smell, doesn't it?
It's a lot darker than normal as well. What's been going on? It's been changing the lights.
Yeah, they've been changed from no light.
They're energy efficient lights.
Oh, that would explain it.
Yeah, we leave them off. It's the most efficient to use lights. I think the smell probably is Will's fear of my incredible threats.
That is true.
You a bit scared, Will? Yeah. No.
Well, the lights are not the only thing that are off. Apparently, the rumor miner is saying that Sam and Max is no longer coming to iPad. Looks like that first episode, the one.
Thank goodness.
Was that the first episode that was episode 2?
Oh, jeez, let me look. I can't remember. Sam and Max.
It's the space tragedy.
Yeah, Sam and Max. Episode 1, The Penal Zone.
Yeah.
Which came out the day that iPad launched here in the U.S. And that's going to be the only episode in that season that comes to iPad. Poor sales and middling reviews are leading Telltale to not release the other episodes.
Okay. So having... There's nothing else, is there, this week? It's not a very...
No, there's two others. Very exciting. Not as disappointing as that one, actually.
Oh, wow.
Two new games that we have not talked about before. Two franchises coming to iPhone that have not been mentioned before. First one, Rumor Miner is predicting that Warner Brothers is bringing a very, very popular arcade fighting series by the end of this year to iPhone and iPod Touch, Mortal Kombat.
Wow. Well,
get over here. Well, I was trying to do a get... Yeah, never mind.
Like the hook thing. Yeah.
Get out of here, get over here. You see.
Yeah. God, I feel bad, Tracy. I've never been a big Mortal Kombat fan. You sound so excited.
I was never a big Mortal Kombat fan. I found it kind of like the shallow beat 'em up to Street Fighter 2.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah, it's just supposed to be a... But when I was at E3, Warner Brothers was showing off the console version. I'm not a huge fighting game person, but everybody was talking about how good the new Mortal Kombat looked. And, you know, if they can match that sort of quality on iPhone and iPod Touch. And you know, Street Fighter was able to do it. Street Fighter 4 was a very well-to-do port.
It's an astonishing version. Yeah.
Yeah, very well done. If they can do that with Mortal Kombat, you know, that would be fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I think they're perhaps slightly on the back foot by having the property that isn't quite as... I don't know. Are there as many people out there that cherish Mortal Kombat as Street Fighter? Because Street Fighter is the one that I kind of look back on fondly. And even at the time, although there was the illicit thrill of excessive blood, gore, and ridiculousness, it wasn't something I ever got into. But I'd be interested to know if there's a scene for Mortal Kombat.
I think that's a good question. I think it's two things. One, Mortal Kombat was always a regional success. It was always very successful in the States. Wasn't successful in Japan. I don't think it did huge numbers in Europe. I think it was really more of an American series. So I think that's one. Mm. Two, franchise has been around for a long time. I think it's lost some of its potency. I don't think it's dead. You know, like Spy Hunter, for example. I think Spy Hunter is kind of done.
It is awesome. I want that back. Telltale, do
it's
Spy
awesome,
Hunter.
But it's done. I mean, Spy Hunter's done. I mean, I don't think
next
it has
year,
it.
Next you're going to tell me Midwinter's done.
So I think that has something. I mean, I know Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe didn't do quite as well as expected. And there are a bunch of reasons for that. You know, is at the tail end of Midway's, you know, downward spiral and so on. But I just don't think this is quite a big of a franchise anymore, certainly.
Yeah. Okay.
I hope they don't include the stupid baby moves in this one.
The Baba... Yeah, what were they called?
It's ridiculous. Yeah, I can't remember their
Babality. Babalities. Babalities.
That was the point. I think that was the point in the series. Was that Mortal Kombat 3 or 2?
I don't care.
Well, that was the point where I thought, well,
talking of iterations, what's the third rumor, Tracy?
Third one, and I'll give you a hint before I tell you. We've been talking a lot about, lately, turn-based role-playing games.
Oh.
Final Fantasy Tactics is coming in. It's the second, so 13 days, less than 2 weeks before we get the crown jewel of the genre.
Mm-hmm.
Disgaea is supposedly coming. And there's going to be a third big series. It's a relatively new series from a publisher that is near and dear to many people's hearts, Sega. They are going to be announcing a brand new installment of Valkyria Chronicles.
You said you were going to let us guess.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go on, Will, guess. Whoops. It'll be just like we've already recorded this. And you
has it got,
again.
I don't know, has it got warriors who take... No, people with wings who take warriors to the about. Never mind.
What?
Well, Valkyries aren't they the ones with wings that take brave warriors to the eternal fight in wherever Valhalla? Or am I getting my mythology muddled up?
You're right. Those are Valkyries. I don't know if Valkyria is.
Oh, Valkyria! They've added an IA. You see, we knew what that room was going to be because you've written it down in the Skype window. So I was just going to do a really obscure guess, but you've spoiled my fun.
Oh well, go on, Tracy.
This one of you take it over. I'm confused now.
Will, you seem to have a passion for this. After you.
I haven't actually played this. I haven't actually played the series. It's like Disgaea, although to be fair, I've played Disgaea now and it's very good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I've heard about it a lot. Though it's a bit odd.
It's not odd. It's actually quite unique in the sense that it's a blend between real time and turn based.
That's
so
odd.
Odd in a positive set in a positive way, not a negative way.
Remember the pitch,
because
balls,
what
Tracy.
You do, it does take a village. you take turns moving your units, so you'll select a unit. It plays out on these battlefields, obviously, and then you would select a unit, and they have turn points. So you say, okay, it's going to take 2 points to move this unit. So then you spend the 2 points, and then it switches to a third person on the battlefield view where you're able to move that unit in real time and act. So there's an active time gauge that'll start as soon as you take control of that character, and you can move and you can attack. And if you could just stand there, and the time gauge will just deplete if you don't do anything, if you wanted to, that'd be a waste. So it's unique in that sense that it's a little bit more interactive, and that's what made it very popular on PlayStation 3, where it was an exclusive, and now it's on PSP. It just launched the sequel, Valkyria Chronicles 2,
mm-hmm.
and Sega has been teasing a new game coming that they were going to be announcing basically within the next few weeks. There was a teaser on one of the official websites that was saying had a date of September 16th there was going to be an announcement about a new Valkyria Chronicles game, which coincides with Tokyo Game Show. So it makes sense to me that it would pop up on iPhone, iPod Touch,
mm-hmm.
given that they just released a PSP version.
And that's genuinely exciting. I mean, embarrassingly, I haven't played either game fully, but I played the demo of the first game fairly.
So wait, that's embarrassing. So what's my not having played any of them at all rank in your book of embarrassments?
I think you probably shouldn't show your face ever again.
That's probably I think that's probably what's driving them to release an iPhone and iPod Touch version.
Yeah.
No one's played these games, and it's a shame.
It's got a really nice aesthetic, kind of comic book, cel-shaded look, but pastely, not primary. It's got, you know, it's kind of muted in its cel-shading, which gives it a very unique feel. And it's kind of set in a kind of steampunky-ish era. So there's a bit of kind of, you know, cogs and pipes on the tanks and quite ornate armor. I think it's really good. I think that could work really well on the iPhone, should this rumor play out.
So I hope so. I think these sort of games work wonderfully on the device. I think Final Fantasy Tactics is going to be great. I think Disgaea is a great fit. So I hope Sega's doing it. I'm supposed to go down to Sega U.S. headquarters next week, so maybe I'll hear something about it then.
Yeah, look around for post-it notes, Tracy.
About the Kaya Chronicles. This wasn't written on the post-it note.
Okay, well, we can't play that yet, but we have been able to play other games, so let's talk about those.
What we've been playing!
Will, you go first this week, because you wanted to the last time I was hosting, and you didn't get to, and I felt bad for 2 weeks.
Thank you.
This is me making up for it.
Okay, I've been playing three games, but I've mentioned one before, so I'm going to skip past that one. Mm. So I've been playing Small World, Medieval, and I've been playing Dodonpachi on the iPad, which I'll talk about. First of all, Medieval HD. It's a castle defense game, not a tower defense, you idiot. It's a castle defense game. You're in a castle. I really don't like this division between castle and tower. Basically, it's the same game, but you have a central thing there, and you have buildings you build on tower defense. So it's not a big enough split to me to split them into genres. But some people get very angry when you don't get it right. So here we go. It's a castle defense game. You play a ballista. You pull back the arrow. You let go. It sounds awfully like Bowmen. Or Bowman. Was it Bowman or Bowmen that you mentioned the other week, Ben?
Bowmen.
Bowmen.
Yeah.
It sounds almost identical to that in the way it works. However, you won't use that mode of firing because it tires your wrist out like nothing else in this world. So you'll end up just tapping the screen to fire the ballista. And the idea is to essentially stop the enemy from coming to your castle. Once you've killed an arbitrary number of them, it moves to the next level and there's infinite number of levels. It's fine. It's quite fun in a sort of shallow and pointless way. It's got a very nice upgrade system, so you do kind of get into it more.
That's how Bowmen hooked me as well.
Yeah,
in the sense
more so than it deserves.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing. Yeah,
because it's enough carrot and just enough stick to get you involved for at least about 10 or 15 levels. After that, once you bought all the upgrades, though, there's nothing else to it. You'll be just sort of realizing that it's a very shallow tap or break your wrist game where there's not really any tactics. There's no real sort of, there's nothing to it. It's just a very sort of bite-sized game. The annoying thing is, though, that it does feature some, there's three ways of winning a level. One is to eliminate the enemy. The second is to capture the enemy's flag from their castle and bring it back to yours. And the third one is to basically destroy their castle, which should, in theory, give it a lot more depth than competitors of this genre. Unfortunately, the troops cost too much. So there's no point taking the flag because it costs so much to build these troops and build their buildings to make them that you might as well just upgrade your ballista. And once you've upgraded your ballista, it's very easy for you to just destroy the castle without needing catapults or anything anyway. So it's sort of, it ends up just sort of being sort of like a wasted opportunity. If they'd have balanced it better, if they'd have made the upgrades, kept the upgrades the same price but made the actual units cheaper, then there would have been a bit more of a balance, a bit more of a decision-making process. As it is, it doesn't have that. It's just shoot the castle. The second game I've been playing, Dodonpachi on the iPad, not the iPhone. It's an iPhone game, but it works well on the iPad. I've been writing up a player guide for this because I've been doing quite well. I'm topping all of the games journalists I'm friends with on Open Fate leaderboards. So, I am one of the top 100 players on a few of the arcade modes. So I'm feeling pretty confident in some of my skills in this. But I'll be writing up a player guide for that, which will be coming up on Friday, maybe Monday. It's really good. I really love it. I like these sort of, I love games which have very sort of hidden depth to it. It's
like Drop 7.
I hate Drop 7. it's really great. I mean, if you're a shooter fan, it's a must buy basically. It's just sort of, I don't know. Every single time I play it, I get a moment where I go, "What the?" Because of the amount of bullets and the fact that I've got 1,000 multipliers sitting there waiting. It's kind of like, it's ace. I love it. Third game I'm playing is Small World, which I have mentioned before. But it's a very good board game adaptation, and there should be a review up soon. So I'll leave it at that, because I already talked about it about 3 or 4 weeks ago. So, yeah.
Cool. Okay. Tracy, what have you been playing?
I have been playing a surprisingly fantastic game called Ultimate Spider-Man Total Mayhem, which I just absolutely adore. It is awesome. I think it's probably the best game that Gameloft has released for iPhone and iPod Touch. It's that good. You obviously play as Spider-Man. It's set in the Ultimate Spider-Man universe, which is kind of the more fun-loving, colorful version interpretation of Spider-Man versus the more, you know, kind of steampunky serious ones that have been done. And it's really good action. It's just really good. It's just really good. It's very fast. It's very fluid, very action-packed, lots of stuff going on in the game. It has great combo system, where you can hit a button to do basic kicks and punches, and you can just mash on that if you want, and he'll do different attacks contextually based on what enemy you're fighting and what environment you're in. You can also mix it up by using webbing attacks, which is a different button, and then there's also a jump button. So, for example, if you were to hit the basic attack button a couple times, then hit webbing, Spider-Man will jump up, shoot a strand of web at the enemy, pull himself toward the enemy, and then pummel him. If you were to jump and then press the attack button, then he'll do a completely different set of attacks. So it's really, there's a lot of variety without it at all being intimidating or difficult to pull off, which is great, because then you're actually encouraged to experiment with different attacks. You don't feel sort of overwhelmed by the complexity of the combo system. And then on top of that, there is a whole counterattack and evade system that occurs contextually whenever those solutions appear in combat. So let's say you're battling, one of Dr. Octopus's goons, and another one comes up from behind and is about to hit you over the head. There's an icon that will appear in the lower left side of the screen that if you press that, Spider-Man will either evade the attack or counterattack. And it's really great because you get this sort of this rhythm that gets going in combat where you're leveling your own attacks and you're on the offensive and then you're jamming on this counterattack / evade button to deal with enemies around you. So in that sense, you're never, one of the things that often happens in action games is that if you are fighting a group of enemies, you're not really fighting them. You're only fighting one guy, right? The AI is sort of turning off the attacks of, the five other guys that are surrounding you and only engaging you with the one enemy that you're attacking. Mm-hmm. That's not really the case in Spider-Man. The AI is active with all of the enemies that are on the screen, and so you're having to deal with multiple enemies at any given time. So that makes it really exciting, really varied. It looks fantastic. It's so far the best looking iPhone 4 game. It's very well optimized for the Retina display. And yeah, it's just really fun. It's really well done. And even if you're not a huge Spider-Man fan, I would say give it a try. It's easily, it's a great comic book adaptation, but it's also a really good action game. So if you like it, action games, you'll really enjoy it.
So what's that one called again, Tracy?
Ultimate Spider-Man Total Mayhem.
Okay, that sounds appealing. Have you been playing anything else, or is that your main game this week?
I also just finished reviewing Mirror's Edge, which has finally come out on iPhone and iPod Touch, and it's good. I would definitely recommend it. It's a nice, affordable price too, £2.99, $4.99, mm-hmm. Which is half the price of the iPad version, which was fantastic. I'm a little conflicted about this iPhone version because it has actually been stripped down from the iPad release, which is pretty disappointing given that the game has been delayed so long. I was expecting something to be added or enhanced as a result of the months that we've been made to wait for this game, and that is not the case. It's essentially the iPad version without the multiplayer. So that's a little bit of a disappointment. But I do think it's still a really good game. I gave it an 8 out of 10, which is definitely a very strong recommendation. If you didn't play it on iPad, you'll really enjoy it on iPhone. But if you have an iPad, I would suggest buying that version instead, because it's just that much richer.
Cool. Okay. I, too, have been playing three games, but I'm just going to skip over two of them fairly quickly and talk about another one in detail. So I've been playing a game called Splode, which iTunes tricked me into thinking was good. So I got some... there was a free gift at the conference last night, I had some credit. So I decided to be frivolous and buy a few games that I was unsure about. And Splode is basically Sneezies, which I reviewed for Pocket Gamer a while ago. I reviewed the PSP Minis version, which is just kind of, you know, these little round things hovering about. You touch one, it explodes, or splodes, and the blast makes other ones explode, and so on and so forth. There's no real skill involved. It's entirely arbitrary. This one is pretty much exactly the same game, but the little sploders kind of shoot off in a direction, which changes the dynamic a little, and you colour the level as you go. So if you liked Sneezies, you'll probably like it. If you are normal, don't buy it. Then there is Epic Win, which I finally got, which is the list RPG, which is brilliant, and it's making me quite productive already. I've already listed loads of little bits, and I have travelled 109 miles on my little quest. And, I mean, there's not really a lot to talk about with Epic Win. It is just a list, and it gives you rewards. And that in itself, perhaps you could talk for hours on how interesting it is that we can encourage ourselves with fake rewards, but we've gone into that previously. I do recommend it, though. It's funny, it's amusing, it's cute, and it's making me a better person, sort of. And then the other frivolous purchase I made was a game called The Incident, which appealed to me because it had kind of pixel art graphics, and anything with pixel art graphics instantly kind of melts my heart. So I paid for that. Apple paid for that for me. And it's very charming. So there are, I think, six levels. The first one is a street moving all the way up to space, kind of, you know, in orbit and city and sky and whatever in between. Not in that order, obviously. You tilt the phone to run left and right, and you tap the screen to jump. Balloons come up the screen occasionally, and once you've collected 10 of those, you get an extra life. A balloon with a cross on will give you health. You have 3 bars of health. Your health is endangered by falling objects, which are heralded by a flashing white section of the screen at the top before they fall, and they stack up. So the idea is to get as far up the screen as you can, and that's your score. 25 meters up, and you finish the first level, and you qualify to go onto the city. And the backdrop changes. It's not instant. You know the level loads, but the run kind of continues. So your score is added at the total height rather than each one starting again. Now, I thought the iPhone has excelled with really simple interactions becoming incredibly addictive games. So you've got Doodle Jump, you've got Cannibalt. There's so little to them, and yet they are compulsive in the extreme. Now, I thought this was going to fall into the same category, but for me it doesn't. And I think the problem is with the jumping mechanic. It's not very satisfying. Jumping about and tilting, you don't feel like you've got much volition in what's actually happening. I mean, I'm in control of him, and that's fine. But obviously you have to rely on whatever landscape, micro landscape, is formed by these components dropping, which are random. And the actual, I don't know, there just seems to be this odd, intangible, satisfying feeling when you jump in Cannibalt. It's, the animation of him running, there's this momentum, that's great. Whereas here you just kind of go up and down, and there's a little bit of a weight, but it just doesn't feel as satisfying. It's not as good. And you end up, 25 meters is a long way with the slow progress at the beginning of the
each
kind of slow dropping object. And you know, each object doesn't add a meter, it just builds up a layer, and eventually this layer adds a meter. And just the first level begins to feel like a chore by 15 meters. And that instantly was a bit of a worry. And I've gone two levels up beyond that because I felt like I really should see, if this changes. But no, the frequency of objects increases, and there's some interesting things that appear, and gems you can pick up which gives you extra lives. But then I felt I started to get to the point, and this is where you really know something there's something wrong, where I was avoiding getting the bonuses because I didn't want any extra lives because it would prolong the experience.
Okay. That's not a good sign.
No. So beautiful visuals and a great base concept, but somehow not poorly executed, but not quite finessed.
You know what? The actual base concept reminds me very much of a tiny, tiny mini game in Metal Slug XX. It's just literally one of 30 mini games, which is exactly the same thing, only it lasts like a minute.
Yeah.
So it isn't quite so bad. And it's Metal Slug, so it's incredibly hard. But
Well, this is it. Really, you can't really save for like mid level. Not that I've seen. I don't think you can. And I mean, if I'm wrong, I apologise on that. But as far as I can see, you can't. So that 25 meters is a bit of a slog. And the fact that each level is discrete means that you don't feel like you're kind of making smooth progress like you do with Cannibalt. You're adding meters at a time, and that's really tangible. But this, once you've done the first level and you've moved up 25 meters, then having to do it again in order to kind of restart your score is a bit depressing. You do unlock these levels, and you can then start from them, but that, I don't know, it just seems to negate the challenge and the point of this type of gameplay. It's a fairly long and an unsatisfactory explanation of this, but I thought it was interesting that a simple concept like that could fall just slightly short and it be quite catastrophic in terms of playability. So I'd avoid that one if I were you, until further updates, and then who knows what will change.
Yep, I agree.
The
whole world will change. So there you go. So we've already really done a user question in that we addressed a complaint brilliantly, I might add, because Tracy, you've been fantastically fluid and clear all the way through, apart from a couple of little tiny buzzes that I heard. But I apologise.
That was me. Sorry.
Oh really?
That's my voice.
Well, if we get a complaint letter next week, you're the one who's being fired. Temporarily, until the joke's over. So that's it. I believe we've reached the end of the podcast. I think that's been quite a long one, hasn't it?
Yay. We did double up.
Yeah, that's true.
It might not be quite as long when I get actually to the file, but you have got the file, right?
Oh, God, no, it hasn't been recording.
No!
So it's goodbye from Will. goodbye from me and Tracy.
And goodbye from me.
Farewell, everybody. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.